Welcome to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pamela and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Harshman Travel Radio Show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. You might have a chance of working with them in their business ventures and your travel plan. So listen in and enjoy the journey. Now on to our Building Fortunes Radio Show with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Let's get started, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio. It's a Friday night. It's 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and you get a chance to hear us on Harshman Travel Radio Show. We do this every Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time for anybody that wants to listen in, and you can always catch them on the radio shows that we've archived. If you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/Harshman Travel, you'll be able to hear the previous ones that we've done, and we've been doing this radio show for a real long time. From when we first got started with Building Fortunes Radio, I had invited Pam to do something because she was building home-based businesses and stuff like that. And she had told me at that time, Peter, we decided that we're going to become travel agents. So I had to stop for a second. I said, well, what kind of travel agents? And she said, like the real kind. I mean, like not the card-carrying kind that you buy a card. I'm a travel agent because I was one of those. She said, nope, we're going to take the certifications and all of this sort of stuff. And I said, you know, that would be really great because there's a lot of people in home-based businesses that, number one, on their bucket list of, you know, wishes, they want to travel more. Number two, they travel all over the place, you know, regularly. And as a result of business, it would be great if we had some experts on the line to give us some of the tips and advance warnings and stuff like that, the special deals that are going on in the travel industry. And lo and behold, of course, with the coronavirus and all the other things, it's even more important to have somebody that really knows what they're doing in the travel business because of so many changes. And I'm going to let Pam introduce herself in a second, then Ron's going to come back next. But I'm also going to say, make sure you sign up for their newsletter. Go to harshmantravel.com, harshmantravel.com, and then also reminding you that it doesn't cost you any more money when you book whatever you're going to book through Harshman Travel. The other side of the equation, like the travel company, the cruise company, the hotels, or the airlines, whatever, they're the ones that actually pay the commissions, so you don't have to. So you get a chance to take advantage of their wonderful experience, great service, that's for sure, and their up-to-date knowledge, and I'm going to be quiet and say, Pam, thanks for being here.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having us again tonight.
You're welcome.
Anyway, a little bit about my background. I started my working career as a 911 dispatcher up in the Pacific Northwest and worked myself up the ranks into court administration. Worked that for several years until I met Ron, and then I moved down to sunny Florida. So that was kind of a culture shock. But once down here, I didn't want to start down at the bottom of the ladder again. So I was kind of looking around for something that would let me work more independently and also hopefully work from home. Ended up getting my realtor's license followed by my broker's license and sold real estate in South Florida for several years. Kind of got burned out on that. It just wasn't my niche. And so I thought, well, went and tried and got my life and health insurance license and sold Medicare supplements to the senior population. Absolutely loved it, loved visiting with the seniors. I was out on the road when I wanted to be, and it was just really cool. However, at the same time, I kept seeing these little carrots dangling in front of me on my Facebook news feed for home-based businesses, MLMs. And so I did try my hand at a few, had some winners, had some losers, but that's where we met, and we have been good friends ever since. And one day when I was out on the road, I happened to get a phone call from one of my friends, and she was saying, you know, have you and Ron ever thought about becoming travel agents? Because we, you know, we're kind of semi-retired type thing and working the hours that we wanted to work. And, you know, I it kind of caught me off guard, but it hadn't been too much prior to that that Ron and I had been talking about doing some traveling because, you know, we were baby boomer empty nesters, and we were at a point that if we wanted to travel, now would have been a good time to travel just because our health was still good, and we were in that kind of a semi-retirement mode. So I couldn't wait to get home and talk to Ron, and the more closer I got, the more excited I got. And once home, we sat down and we talked about it, weighed the pros and cons, did a little research, and then once we decided to do it, we jumped in both feet and got all the training that we needed and the licensures and all that good stuff, and we were up and running. We've done a whole lot more travel than we probably would have otherwise. And we've also helped an awful lot of people get the most out of their travel dollars. So it's been a win-win situation all the way around, and we love what we do.
Excellent. Okay, perfect. And Ron, over to you.
All righty. Thanks, Peter. Good to be here again. My background's very different than Pam's. I spent many, many years as a licensed clinical psychologist, and I was very heavily involved in the profession. Basically on both sides of the profession, had my own private practice, so I was very heavily involved in clinical work, but at the same time got heavily into the whole self-administrative part of the profession. I was on the board of directors of the Canadian Psychological Association, head of the applied division, represented the Canadian Association with the American Psychological Association, and sat on several ethics boards, professional affairs committees, so really saw the whole oversight of what was right, what was wrong, what people were doing that they should have been, and what people were doing that they shouldn't have been. So it really opened my eyes from that perspective in terms of really realizing that if you were going to be in clinical practice, you had to have knowledge and experience to do your work, but you also had to be aware of the rules and regulations that were necessary to be followed. When I got into private practice, it didn't take me long to start specializing, working with young couples and young families. I did a lot of sexual therapy, a lot of premarital therapy, a lot of work with young kids with learning disabilities. And unfortunately, working with that population meant also being involved with a number of young couples that were going through divorce and fighting over custody, using their kids as the last weapons that they could against each other. So it was very disturbing, but some major changes were happening in the legal arena at that time that were very, very exciting for me, because up until that time, it had pretty much been a pre-drawn conclusion that if there was a young couple going through divorce and there were young children involved and any dispute over custody and access, it was almost guaranteed that the court would award custody to mommy and visitation to daddy. And that was true both in Canada, where I was practicing at the time, and also in the States. But around that same time that I started specializing in that area, there was a major, major shift in the judiciary's approach. And a lot of research, a lot of cases that came to the forefront indicating that predisposition to mommy gets custody and daddy gets access was not only not good, but it was in many, many cases pretty destructive. So it was a very good move on the part of the Canadian judiciary to take a stand that from that time going forward, any judges that made decisions about child custody and disputed custody cases and divorce actions had to base their decision on the psychological best interests of the children involved. And it was much easier in Canada for the judiciary to take that kind of a major, major change in direction, because in Canada, the Divorce Act is a piece of federal legislation, So in all provinces, all divorces are handled at the Supreme Court level in each province, which means there's a lot more standardization, a lot more formality, a lot more regulations, etc., as to how things go. So it was much easier to make that move in Canada, but it was very quickly followed in the States by the American judiciary. But in Canada, as a result of this change, it was recognized that although it was a good decision to say going forward all custody and access decisions are going to be based on the psychological best interest of the children involved, it was a question of who was going to make that determination. Because obviously judges and lawyers and court personnel, everybody in the judicial system, did not have the training or the experience, the knowledge, or in many cases even the interest, to get involved in doing those kind of psychological, sociological investigations that would allow one to come up with the clinical recommendations as to what would be in the kid's best interest. So as a result, we saw two new subspecialties develop in both the clinical psychology arena and in the clinical social work arena. And it became very challenging but very rewarding to get involved, get the training, get the experience to be designated as an expert in that area. And since I was one of the first ones involved, I ended up also doing a lot of guest lecturing at the Faculty of Law at the university, talking to law students about the proper use of expert witnesses, how to examine, how to cross-examine, what to look for in the psychological, sociological reports that were presented to the court. At the same time, did a lot of training at both social work conferences and psychology conferences, talking to other clinicians who were interested in getting involved in this brand new, clinical specialty. So it was very, very challenging, as I said, but very rewarding. It was heavy-duty work because in order to come up with realistic and legitimate recommendations, you had to do a lot of investigation. You had to obviously interview mommy, interview daddy, interview each of the kids together and individually. You had to see the kids interacting with mommy, the kids interacting with daddy. You had to interview all the corollary people involved, whether it be teachers or school counselors, any psychologists or psychiatrists that were involved, next-door neighbors, family members, priests, ministers, rabbis, the whole shebangy. And then once you did that, be prepared to come into court with a report and recommendations and be exposed to being on the witness stand as an expert for the court. You were not a hired gun for mommy or daddy. So what that meant was you would have one attorney, whoever was representing the parent that you were recommending for custody. They were saying you were great, you did a good job, their client was very happy, da-da-da-da-da. But then as soon as they were finished, the attorney representing the other parent would have a professional obligation to stand up and criticize you and ask you why you didn't do this or why you did that or why you made this conclusion instead of that conclusion, etc. And it was a very new experience. But what really topped off the new experience was the first time that happened to me. I was ready for the grilling and quite able to handle it. That didn't bother me. But when the judge called for a recess and everybody went out into the corridor in front of the courtroom, the attorney who had just been, trying to destroy me on the witness stand came up and asked me for my business card because he said that he had some other cases that he wanted to get me involved in and, was very impressed with my testimony, et cetera, et cetera. So it was a lot of fun. It was, had many, many cases. I guess I was involved in probably between 200 and 300 cases in the Supreme Court. But after doing that for several years in Canada, just by chance, I was visiting with some friends in South Florida, and they introduced me to a psychiatrist friend of theirs who was doing a lot of criminal forensic work in the South Florida courts. He was very interested in what I was doing and said that in the Florida courts there was a lot of talk about these changes that were coming in terms of child custody, but nobody had really understood how to get involved with that. And he thought it would be a great opportunity. He asked me to give up my practice in Canada and move down to South Florida and go into practice with him and develop that whole civil forensic aspect of his practice. And it was a very nice invitation, moving from Western Canada, where the last winter that I was there, we had 25 days in a row where the warmest it got was 20 below zero. So the opportunity to move to South Florida didn't take too long for me to make that decision. But I did make the move. I was very pleasantly surprised when I got here because I started talking to some of the family law practitioners and met with the general masters handling some of the divorces. And everybody was very, very welcoming, very open to understanding the whole concept and seeing how it could be done. And very, very accepting, and I ended up being the first, mental health professional to be admitted as an expert in the family courts in both Dade and Broward counties, representing the psychological best interests of children in disputed custody cases. So it was pretty interesting and exciting. After I did that for a number of years, ended up going out to California for a while and getting involved with another psychiatrist doing some heavy-duty training and stuff like that. But then came back to Florida. And once Pam and I got together, we decided to semi-retire, moved from Southeast Florida to Southwest Florida, started raising alpacas. As Pam mentioned, she got involved in home-based business, multi-level marketing, and although I wasn't interested in any of that, I was certainly fully supportive of her doing it. But when she came home and said that she really wanted us to talk about becoming travel agents, as she said, it was something that really hit both of us because we had very recently been talking about the fact that, you know, if we wanted to travel and we wanted to see other parts of the world, now was the time to do it. We either did it or we just continued to talk about it. And we both realized that as certified travel agents, legitimate travel agents, working with all of the different travel vendors, it would give us the opportunity to do a lot more travel than we would have been able to do. And we realized that it was going to be a matter of doing all the training, getting all the licensure, getting all the bonding and all that stuff, and also working with a number of the travel vendors to find those ones that we felt comfortable representing and promoting. And it's turned out to be very, very challenging, very fun for me. It was great because I was able to do the same thing I've been doing for so many years in clinical practice, working with families and helping people turn on lights and hold up mirrors. But in clinical practice, I was always dealing with people in situations of stress. And as a travel agent, I saw that I would be able to be working with families in situations of joy, you know, people who are planning weddings or anniversaries or multi-generational family vacations or retirement parties, etc. So I really decided to get into it, and we've had a ball doing it. We've done a lot more travel, and we've certainly helped a lot of people save money and make the most out of their travel time and funds. And as usual, I've gone over, so I will shut up.
You're good to go. We can take as much time as we want. We're going to do a commercial right now. We'll be right back with Pam and Ron Harshman.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Meagle. This special segment can be heard again with almost any device connected to the Internet by going to buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Listen in often and get to know Pam and Ron. Go to the buildingfortunesradio.com website to listen in to the show. No matter where you're at in life, you can benefit by listening to and by working with Pam and Ron. Let them book your next cruise, vacation getaway, or group event. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio and witness their ability to pursue their dreams in the field they love. Thanks for listening. And now, back to the Harshman Travel Radio Show.
And we are back. Peter Mingles here with Ron Harshman. He's going to cover some stuff. But before we forget to re-mention this, make sure you go to billingfortunesradio.com/Harshman Travel or just go to harshmantravel.com and then sign up for the newsletter and also take a look at all the other cool things they have over there. So, Ron, over to you. What's new?
Alrighty. Thanks, Peter. Lots of stuff going on. One of the main things is, as we have talked about before on the show, my expectation was that November was seemingly a pretty fixed date for return of cruising, and at this point it very much looks like that's going to be the case. Everything has been moving in that direction. We've started to see some cruise lines start taking on passengers and start short cruises in Europe, and here in the States, we've got some that are already lined up for the Caribbean, and some of the smaller ships are already traveling around in Alaska. A number of things that have come across that have been very interesting. The Dominican Republic made a very unique decision in order to foster travel and kind of pump up their travel industry. And what they said was that they were going to start offering travel assistance programs for visitors paid for by the government of the Dominican Republic through December of 2020. And the coverage would be provided at no cost for visitors for the rest of the year. Instead of having everybody come through with COVID tests, they would start doing random tests, replacing, you know, the requirement that they did have for everybody having a negative test before they arrived. They were going to continue with social distancing and the use of masks, but they really wanted to kind of make everybody feel very comfortable in terms of health and safety. And I thought that that was a pretty unique thing for them to come up with. So that's in effect. We've also seen some changes. Most states now have dropped or have never had any requirements for out-of-state travelers being restricted. But there are a number of states that do have. And just to give you an idea, Alaska says that all non-residents must provide documented evidence of negative COVID-19 tests taken within 72 hours prior to them leaving to come up. Those unwilling to test would have to have a 14-day quarantine. Connecticut, people coming from states that have a COVID-19 test positivity rate higher than 10% who are remaining in Connecticut for more than 24 hours required to quarantine for 14 days. Hawaii, all arrivals from out of state observe a mandatory 14-day quarantine. Illinois, no statewide restrictions, but anybody entering the city of Chicago would have to quarantine. So you can see, and there are a few more, there was Kentucky and Kansas and Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, and New York and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Rhode Island and Vermont. I'm just going through the list here, that all have still restrictions for out-of-state visitors, and the other states are saying it's fine. And as we've heard so many times from the president and from many other people now, it's becoming much more of a commonplace message. It's amazing how the coronavirus problems are going to disappear on November the 4th. But anyhow, we'll leave politics out of it. I don't want Pam to get mad. Anyhow, many of the cruise lines are really working overtime. to create programs and procedures to let people know that cruising is safe and it's something that people can look for, forward to, and not be overly concerned. Obviously, as we've said before, it's going to be a slow step-by-step process. I think that some people are going to say, as soon as it's ready, I'm going. Other people, I think the vast majority of people, are going to say, I really want to go, but I'm going to wait for a while until I've seen a number of cruises go and people come back and not have big panic that everybody on board, came down with the virus. But just to go through a list of what some of the cruise lines have come up with, they're basically saying they've made changes in their booking procedures, in their risk disclosures, so they're letting people know. Anybody who has been involved with any of the cruise lines has heard that they have all changed their cancellation policies. They're allowing people to cancel without any cancellation fees up to a much closer to travel time than their normal situation. Again, just trying to make people feel more comfortable booking. They are staggering guest arrivals and departures, which makes a lot of sense. Their health screening, including temperature checks for anybody that's coming on board. So it's going to take a little bit longer to get on board, but it's a nothing deal. Anybody who's been to the doctor's office in Florida within the last several months knows that before you walk into the office, they've got somebody standing outside and they take one of these non-contact temperature readings. And in some cases, they even put a little band around your wrist with your temperature and the date and make sure that you're legitimate to come in. They're going to have onboard testing capability. They are augmenting their medical facilities and their staff. They are managing capacity, so they're not going full board, full capacity ships. They are practicing social distancing. They are going with some dining restrictions. Again, social distancing, number of people in the dining room at any one time, etc. They're going with a lot of contactless technology, so they're able to communicate without actually touching you and all that kind of good stuff. So they're, as I have said before, and we've talked about it several times, one of the most welcome changes is that the muster drill is now all done on TV in the comfort of your own stateroom, and you're not standing there for half an hour with everybody packed in like sardines. So those are some of the changes that are being made. A number of the cruise lines are offering tremendous deals right now, and I think it's, again, important for anybody thinking about any travel, whether it's cruising, particularly cruising, but any other travel. Right now, the travel vendors have very good offerings, and a lot of times certified travel agents have those things that are not publicly available. They're not available if you just go online. They are much better than what's online, and as you've said many times before, Peter, and especially with the COVID and with the changes that are certainly constantly ongoing, and we're hearing about more and more every day, having a certified travel consultant to walk you through things and to be there if and when any issue comes up, any problem comes up, is extremely important, and all of the cruise lines are really pushing this very strongly right now as well. But one of the things that they have also seen is tremendous tremendous increase in the number of bookings going forward. The number of bookings for 21 have far exceeded the bookings for 20, and there we're seeing a lot of increased bookings, you know, into 22, and it's you know, that's unusual, because usually you get a lot closer before you have fixed dates and fixed itineraries, etc. But it's certainly a very positive sign. Starting November 7th, you're going to see a number of cruises from the into the Caribbean from Barbados. Those are definitely starting with Sea Dream and a couple of the other cruise lines. We've seen a reduction in inventory with Carnival Cruise Line, which is one of the Carnival Corporation, holdings. They have reduced a few of their ships. I think they've sold like maybe four or five ships. But they are still on deck for purchasing all the new ones that have been ordered. And a lot of the changes that people are going to see are not only on board, but when you get off in terms of different itineraries, different ports of call. They are cementing those in and adding a number. And they are also working with the land excursions very differently than it was. Again, they're going to carry on the social distancing aspect, the reduced number of people aspect. But I think that from everything that I'm seeing right now, I would guess that by very early 2021, we will certainly see an almost full return of all of the cruise lines, all of the itineraries, all of the ships going and trying to get back to a normal pace. A number of the specialty places, Hawaii and Alaska, are very different. Hawaii, unfortunately for the Hawaiian people, has a governor, and again, this may change on November 4th, but up until now, this governor has been extremely restrictive to the people on the islands, and any visitors and opening of ports, etc., have been delayed, and as a result, the Hawaii travel industry is suffering, in my opinion, much more than they should be or that they have to be. But we'll see what happens again, unfortunately, after the election. It's crazy that things are so dependent upon politics right now in the United States, but they are. So Hawaii, everything's on hold. Alaska, opposite situation. All of the vendors in Alaska are looking forward to a return of the travel pattern and travel visitors, and the expectation is that their season is going to be bang up. There are a lot of reservations already. Every one of the cruise lines that goes to Alaska is, every one of them is indicating far more bookings than they usually have for the next season, which starts in March, goes through September. So I expect that Alaska will not undo the problems that they've had this last year. They're still going to be hurt, and I think it's going to take a little bit to get them back. But they are certainly going to be able to have a good recovery, And it looks like they're going to have a very, very solid travel component for 2021. And again, I've got over, so I'll shut up.
No, great information. Take as much time as you want. And it would be interesting to see the dynamics of how this thing shakes out, how the activities may change, the menus may change, the all that sort of stuff. The entertainment may change as they're starting to, you know, graduate themselves into going back to, quote-unquote, whatever normal is going to look like when we're done. So it's really fascinating to see how this goes and then to see what's going to open up, whether it's Europe or, you know, the United States faster, or what's going on with Canada. I don't even know if the Canadian borders are open yet for travel back and forth. So watching this whole thing as it shakes out with the different philosophies is very enlightening, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens after you mentioned the election. So great stuff.
Yeah, it's, so it's really unfortunate. I mean, you know, and I don't want to get overly political, but when you have the California Director of Public Health saying right out front, no, I don't see us being open, able to open the schools until after the election. I mean, you know, this lady
Did he mean something else? Yeah, I know. Oh.
Yep. And,
crazy.
And that, you know, I mean, that wasn't somebody's conspiracy theory or wishful thinking. I mean, it's right on videotape that you see her say that, and she tries to get around it by saying, oh, we're just not going to be ready until after, I guess, after the election. And it's insane. But that's what it is.
There we go. So it's very interesting to see how things shake out, and with the introduction of the vaccines, that's going to be another whatever game changer one way or another, how well that gets done, and if there's any uptick on whatever's happening with the winter months and people staying inside, who knows? But it's very interesting. But the travel industry is pushing, and that's really great for a lot of people because they need to get outside. They need to get out.
Peter, and we've talked about this before. It's not only the travelers that are involved, and it's not only the travel vendors like the cruise lines or the hotels or the car rental or airlines or whatever. It's all the people that are involved at places that get visited. You know, the whole economy is affected for people who are dependent upon the travel industry, all the people who work at the ports, the luggage people who, you know, pick up your luggage when you arrive at the port and get it onto the ship and into your stateroom, all of the stores and all of the, you know, shops, all of the vendors that are dependent upon having people, all these little ports of call that have, you know, they're used to 2, 3, 4, 5 cruise ships arriving at different times during the day, 3, 4 different days during the week, and it's all been gone. So it's a major, big umbrella.
Yep. Yeah, the ripple effects are huge. So having said all that stuff, make sure you check them out, harshmantravel.com. One of the cool things, just a friendly reminder, if you're thinking about cruising or going anywhere, if you put a deposit on it, many times you could pay off monthly. So with a small deposit, you can hold the cruise, lock in the price, pay it off monthly. They're gracious refunds just in case anything would go weird or you need to change your mind or something else happens. So all the reasons for you to get super excited about going on cruises for whatever reasons why, or anywhere else you want to go, make sure you go do your travel vacation over at harshmantravel.com. Going to catch everybody next week. And we will have, Ron, just so you know, I would be wondering which table or back table on what far end of what deck we would be able to have our political conversations on without being overheard in the middle of the ocean. That's what I want to reserve. That's what I want to reserve. We'll talk about that next week on Building Fortunes Radio. So long, and good night, Pam. We're going to hang up before we get in trouble. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Have a good week. Bye.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear previous radio shows with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.